Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Krebs comes up top. Clearly the Sabres cycling their forwards high in the zone. Scores! In across the Capitals line, Thompson drops it. Layers here. Tuck scores! Quinn walks it in, holds it, drags it through, scores! The mighty Quinn! And that's going to give a chance here for Dylan Cousins to put it in the empty net, and he does.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Sabres, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Hey, good morning. Happy Friday. Josh, you forgot the highlight of the fight at the end of the game.
Wasn't that the only thing that actually happened last night?
That was a key to victory.
Even though it happened with 0.00 seconds on the clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, to me, a great example of, like, I wonder who was it that got bumped?
It was Tage.
It wasn't even that bad. It was, you know.
Yeah. It was
a bump.
Well, Darlene started it, kind of. He laid out Oshie for, like.
Yes. Because he was upset Oshie did anything to Tage from behind with 1 second left, right?
Yes.
That's why.
Yes. And, I mean, not to say there's anything wrong with that, of course. You know, like, that kind of stuff happens at the end of games.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, I did wake up to a tweet about the fight. Did you see it, too? You were not tagged in it.
No.
You were referred to as Sneaky Skip Bayless in the tweet.
Oh, okay. So, off to a roaring start.
It's a Friday. Let's start here for Matthew. So, the video goes out of the fight after the game last night, and I wake up to a tweet in the middle of the night from Matthew that says, "Can't wait for Jeremy and Sneaky Skip Bayless, you, to tell us how toughness doesn't matter and all you need is skilled forwards."
Okay.
So there's a lot to unpack there, because would we say that? No.
Also, wait, one more time.
That we were going to come on and say that it's all about skilled forwards, not toughness. You don't need toughness, doesn't matter. Something that I don't think we really say. Also worth pointing out in this game, who scored the four goals to win? Quinn, Benson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. They fought after the whistle in a game, and I mean, all right, what do we take from it? If you were inspired by this fight from them, it was their first game that didn't count.
Right.
And they showed you what they could have been.
I mean,
they did was they beat a team they should have finished ahead of in the standings.
Right, a team that they're probably better than.
And that they won't finish ahead of in the standings.
Right.
So, I don't know.
I didn't take anything from the fight. I just watched it like 10 times. I'm not going to lie. I watched it a bunch. Like, I love that stuff. Once in a while mixed in. I don't think it's meaningful. I don't really care if it's meaningful. I like watching when, okay, sure, Oshie hits Tage from behind, yeah, Darlene, go in there. And then I've got two guys fighting at the same time, like back-to-back. I'll watch that.
Yeah,
I don't think it means anything about who was.
Tage was throwing bombs.
That's
too.
One thing, like, I wanted to get to.
It was destroying Pacioretty.
Who probably didn't want to fight.
I watched it back, as I mentioned a couple times, and I watched Pacioretty, and he never gave an indication to me that he wanted any of that.
No.
In which, you know, he's like, oh no, this Godzilla that is a foot taller than me is just raining bombs from above. Like, this is not good.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever threw a punch.
How does everybody feel about the fight if they lost 4-2?
It'd be more of an eye roll, wouldn't it? It'd be more of, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, whatever. They gave their fans a show. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And, right, Tage, to me, is the big story there, where he, whether it's taking out frustration, you know, why not? This is our last home game. Might as well mix it up. Maybe.
Because the other one is Greenway and Wilson. And, like, Wilson wants to go every every time he takes a breath, he
Wilson
wants
wanted to
go
after the empty net goal.
Yeah,
sure.
For whatever reason.
So Greenway's got to go.
There's a very specific set of ways you're allowed to score an empty net goal. We're learning that. We're learning that that's the case.
Yeah, baseball rules,
yes,
maybe, for that.
We're developing those, yes.
So Greenway had to go when he's mixed up with Wilson. Tage didn't have to, and he just, right, did he let his frustration out on poor Max Pacioretty, who just happened to be tied up with him there? Tage did not hold back at all. They did help their odds of getting cheered at the end when they saluted the fans, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
They definitely increased their odds of that, and they did get cheered when they lifted their sticks at the end. So that helped.
Well, good for them.
And Dahlin, I mean, yesterday he got a question about, like, the captaincy, and he said, "If I'm ready to be the next captain of this team," like, paraphrasing, he said, "I'm ready to be the captain of the next team, of this team." And the game after he says that, final home game of the year, you know, this is what I don't care as much, but a lot of fans will want this from their captain. Is your best player got hit from behind with 1 second left in a game that's already over. Your captain skated from center to go after the guy.
Yep.
A lot of fans want that.
Yeah, I mean, there.
And I do. I'm not saying that it's bad.
No, it shows that you're plugged in. And there are multiple games this year where we would have conversations afterward that Lukanen got run twice and nobody did anything about it.
Oh,
like, just go over and put a hand on a guy. Just go over and let him know you're there. And all season long, the Sabres might have been a little lacking in that department. You know, I think two things can be true. People can appreciate that stuff, and also know that's not going to win you the games.
Right. You have to win the games outside of
also,
that.
Also, the other thing about last night, so I did the math very quickly. This is going to be, it was, you know, 11 at night. I'm looking at my phone trying to do the math here. So I went to see what the record is for the Sabres after a loss.
Uh-huh.
Because I wanted to drive home the point, which is, for you to watch them lose a game, get mad, come back and say, like, they did it again. They won. Who is this team? Heard that a lot this year. I counted up the Sabres' record after a loss.
Okay.
They have 42 losses.
Sure. Okay.
If you count
that includes overtime.
Yeah.
And shootout.
Yeah. Someone else can count it up and audit this, but it's in the neighborhood of. They are 28-13-1 following a loss.
28-13-1?
Yeah. If they lose a game, I mean, they've had some losing streaks along the way, but if they lose a game, they're probably going to win the next one. And wait till you hear the record after a win.
Oh, man.
They're probably going to lose the next one.
It's going to be like the opposite, right? It's going to be like 10. Do you
10,
have that too?
10, 24, and 5.
10, 24, and 5.
That's what it would be. That's how many games they played.
Yeah.
So nothing should surprise you when it comes to, like, what do they play next, Florida? Who wants to bet what they do? I bet they lose.
And then you bet they win against Tampa on Monday.
You know what? They might.
Yeah.
Might as well finish the season alternating wins and losses, which is something they've done the whole year. So,
yeah.
Anyway, good morning. Jeremy and Joe, and I woke up to that tweet from a guy that's mad that I don't think the Sabres need to be tough in a game where they fought after the whistle once they were already eliminated from the postseason. Okay? That's how my morning started. Then, of course, there's the...
Are they even not tough? Who of their best players would you label as, like, not tough? Would someone ever say that about Dahlin?
I don't think so.
Dahlin, not only, like, there he is last night, skating from center to go after TJ Oshie. Dahlin destroys people over the middle of the ice. He's, like, the biggest checker on the team when he wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tage has fought before last night. That was not the first time he's done that.
All right, the number one guy that is
is
not tough that people might be mad about it, is it Power?
Yes.
That's the one?
That's absolutely the
Who's
one.
Who's second? I mean, Skinner doesn't fight. He just makes people insane.
Skinner got suspended last year for cross-checking a dude in the teeth.
That is true.
Like, even Skinner does stuff
Cousins
like that.
Cousins fights occasionally.
Cousins does, right?
Krebs will do that.
Yep. I mean, Tuck would do it, and Greenway, is he one of their best players? No, but Greenway, he's on the roster.
He's on the roster to bring that element.
Like, what, are we mad 18-year-old Zach Benson isn't going to fight people? No, you're right. You're right. You nailed the guy. It's Power.
It's Power.
It's not much more than that, though. Power doesn't hit. Power does not hit. If you look at his last couple years, like, the hit numbers, which is always subjective because every arena does it different, whatever. He just nothing on that front. And I said this with Paul the other day, that I wonder when he's at his best, let's say there's another step for him to come, but it's not like a Norris step. Like he's gonna be better than he's been, but he's not gonna be one of the best defensemen in hockey. I can just see a future where we are debating for all times how good Owen Power is, the same way that Stephon Gilmore got the bait. Because he's not a flashy player, and you don't really see the plays that bring the value. You just kind of have to trust that, hey, this breakout pass and this zone exit and this play to keep it in, and the like, there's going to be little by little by little all added up to, this is a darn good hockey player. You're just never going to get, you know, him bone-crushing someone across the middle or going coast-to-coast. Like, Power's going to be a guy that I think is going to be the bizarro Ristolainen,
right,
if you will.
Actually good but doesn't hit, instead right. of hits but isn't actually good.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, that's fair. I saw a stat on Power that he leads all defensemen in percentage of passes that are like successful breakouts or something like that.
Yeah.
He's one of the best in the league at that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, you want a lot more to his game, obviously. Whatever, I mean, here we are. We're talking about the Sabres missing the playoffs again. They won a game.
And we're debating who's tough.
Right. Like, didn't this organization have to ultimately go down the road of tanking because they tried to build the whole team out of tough?
Darcy?
The plan was... Yes. They didn't. If we really want to go back way back in the drought,
sure.
If you wanted to do a turning point, one of those like 30 for 30 docs,
uh-huh.
The Miller hit on Lucic, you could say that was a turning point. It showed that they weren't tough. Then they decided to just try to only be tough, and they were awful.
They tried to fight the Bruins. That offseason after Miller got run, do you remember what their two moves were?
Was it Steve Ott?
They traded Derek Roy for Steve Ott, and they signed John Scott.
Yeah. All-star.
Those were the moves.
All-star. Like, sorry. John Scott.
All-star John Scott.
Yeah.
Those they wanted to fight the Bruins. Like, okay, how'd that go?
Right, how'd it go?
How'd that go?
How's it going for the Leafs with Ryan Reeves? Like, he's on the team.
He's on the team.
They're in third in their division.
Yeah.
And when he's on the ice, they're a mess.
Right.
He never plays.
He's going to get benched in the playoffs. Whatever. 100%. Like, but right.
The point from the person who tweets me right away, like at, you know, 3 in the morning, whatever it was, he's probably not making the point about fights, making the point about looking like you're engaged and, yeah, I mean, just like you, like, I want my team to look like that. We talk about hockey being the one sport where when your team starts to do that, you feel so inspired you want to jump over the boards.
Yes.
And the Sabres, like, I can remember games where they fought and it was lame. It's funny, this is like the most random example of a game. Bulldog tells a story a lot of when he and I went to a game early in the tank season, and I was actively cheering for Tampa goals, and how he wanted to punch me in the face.
Uh-huh.
But, I was committed. I'm not ashamed of that. I wanted them to lose. And
in, like, October? This
it might have been the opener.
Right away.
It might have been the opener. But I think they lost that game, maybe like 3-1. They lost. They were never competitive. But the point of the story is, at one point, there was a fight. Like, the Sabres got into a scrap, and I did what you explained, what would have happened if the Sabres had done that last night while losing. I rolled my eyes like, this is silly. Like, it's opening night, you're losing, you're going to be one of the worst teams in the league, but if you do that, people will think you're a tough team. I mean, Paul has said for the last however many months, this group is not mentally tough, isn't it? Do you need to be physically tough all the time? Can you ask for some mental toughness out of the group or anything like that?
Right.
You know, that's Paul's assessment, and I trust Paul and his opinion. So they need to be mentally tougher. All right, well, in the offseason, you want them to get Stamkos or Pavelski.
Mm-hmm.
Or
Taze posted on Instagram yesterday.
Okay, the Drury move, the idea that they're going to be mentally tougher, more bought in, more unified, more professional, more whatever. I mean, stuff behind the scenes. And coming with that might be that they are more physically difficult to play against, but anyone thinks about the moves this team needs to make, maybe it's a coach, maybe it's the new players,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's Tage Thompson scoring 47 again, that'd be nice.
Maybe it's Dylan Cousins getting to 20.
Yeah. Yeah, so I found it, you know, whatever, you can tweet that stuff at me, and I don't know why he called you Sneaky Skip Bayless, but Sneaky here we are, you know?
Yeah.
This is where we are. Sabres fans yelling at each other after a game that they lost their first out of the playoffs. There was someone with a sign in the building that said Ted Nolan equals playoffs.
It was like a whole row of people.
Yeah, I saw
it was huge. It was a banner, like a
that took some coordination.
It's like 10 it's 10 people long.
So what do we think happened there? Did are those all 10 of those people are in on it, or someone, a group of 3 or 4, brought it in and then stretched it out, and then the other people just went along with it?
That's I would say the, what happens if the
you're,
latter.
What happens if you're in a row?
I'd be like,
and
I'm not,
someone is stretching out that sign.
I'm not holding that
and
sign.
They're like, hey, can you hold this for a minute?
Yeah, I'm not holding that sign.
You're not holding that sign?
No.
They didn't bring it out till like the end of the game either. Like it was just kind of dormant, and then all of a sudden I looked in the corner and there it was.
Yeah,
like it just appeared.
Yeah. I got a text in a group chat from someone that said, is that Ted Nolan? Question mark. And there was no other context provided. He didn't say, is that a Ted Nolan sign? Is that Ted Nolan? So immediately I turned back to the game, you know, like turned it back because I didn't see the sign originally. Like, is Ted Nolan in the crowd? Did Ted Nolan come to Fan Appreciation Night? That was another thought I had about yesterday was it's Fan Appreciation Night, and when anyone says Fan Appreciation Night, like I know they do it every year. They always do jersey off their back, right? Final home game of the year.
50-50 split. Yeah.
But when anyone ever says Fan Appreciation Night, you think of 2011.
Where they brought the alumni back?
Yeah, you think of the Flyer game where they clinched, and right, that they brought all the alumni back. And I remember that being something they wanted to do more of. When Pegula showed up, that was talked about. And that night was awesome for that. And maybe they haven't just because, what, the vibes of the team? The environment isn't right for it.
Yep.
But that, I mean, give me something of that ilk, right? Like, everyone was back. There was rows and rows and rows of Sabres alumni that showed up for that game. And that is something that, I mean, will they ever get back to? I hope they do. Like, next year's Fan Appreciation Night. Oh, introducing, we're going to bring back beloved teams. Here's the 05-06 Sabres. Please welcome to the ice number 45, Dmitry Kalinin. And please, the crowd goes crazy.
Please welcome the GMs of 4 NHL teams.
Oh, yeah, that might be tough. You have a lot of those guys.
Yeah. No, but around. I get it.
So, I don't know.
How tough
last
is that?
Last night seemed like it was cool to be at. They won the game. There was a fight at the end. You had all the other stuff. Our buddy Ryan Gates won tickets to the NHL draft.
Which is in Detroit? Where is it this year?
Vegas.
Vegas!
At the Sphere.
Wow.
I think it's at the Sphere.
What a win.
Should be banned from all drafts for all the times because he quit over Josh Allen.
What a win for former Afternoon Show producer Ryan Gates. Hey, so the Sabres won. Good for them. They have now, through 80 games, 81 points. And
so Washington, they're up with like 83 or 85. Or 81.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pittsburgh's in the final playoff spot right now. Washington, Detroit, Philadelphia, all 1 point back. Boy, if they were alive, last night's game would have been sold out, electric. I mean, really, if they had 2 more wins at any point this season, we'd be talking about them 85 points, 1 point out of the playoffs, and, you know, 32 regulation wins, too. I mean, if they had 2 more, you'd add 2 more to that. So, anyway, it's the Sabres are frustrating. It's how it goes, right? We all wake up and yell at each other about it.
Yeah. Even after they won.
Yeah. But last night's game's good. Jack Quinn.
That was a nice goal.
It was a very nice goal.
That was a nice goal.
It is kind of wild to think about Quinn. So I was looking at this. Benson and Quinn scored. Two of their younger players.
Mm-hmm.
And where they've gone in the draft as they've overstocked their forward cabinet. And they still have guys, of course, in Rochester and throughout the hockey world. So Quinn this season has 8 goals. Benson has 10.
Mm-hmm.
Think of how much time he has missed, Quinn.
Yeah.
I mean, if Quinn plays a full 82-game season, that's like a 30-goal pace he's flirting with.
Yeah.
That's 30 goals they miss from him.
Yeah.
And if you want to say Benson made the team because he was a replacement, like, okay, Benson had 10. I mean, Benson's a nice player, and I think there's a lot to like about him, but if I told you at the start of this whole thing he's going to get 10, is that a good number? It's fine. It's probably the lower end of what you would have thought. Maybe the high end is 18 to 20. Like, I'm not saying you should have expected him to be setting the world on fire, but, you know, hey, we're going to burn the first level in the first year of his ELC, and he's going to be on this team as an 18-year-old, 10 goals.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, he is. It's funny, like, even when you say young players, Benson is 4 years younger than Jack Quinn. Like, he is very. He's insanely young for the league. So, 10 goals. I mean, what did Paterka have last year? 12?
Yeah.
Right? And Quinn maybe had like 14 last year. So he's not too far off where those guys would have been in their rookie years, and he would have been 3 years younger than those guys in their rookie years. So, but yeah, like, right. Like, if you told me he had 10 goals, would you, not at the 9-game mark, so someone from the future comes and says he's going to score 10 goals this year. You keeping him around?
You might. You might
still, because you don't have a better idea.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because like, otherwise I'm giving Victor Olofsson more minutes. And like, is he scoring? Like, how's that going to go?
He might have scored 30, but also maybe been a problem for you. No, I think if you're told the number is 10, you say, okay.
The other thing about Benson is, like, I don't know. I'd have to look at the minutes that he's played with guys. Quinn, where would he be playing all year if he had been healthy? He'd been stapled to that line with Paterka and Cousins.
Yep.
Like, maybe their most... That line, I think, to this date, even though Quinn has played so few games, is still the line that scored the most goals for them at 5-on-5 this year, which is incredible. So, like, Quinn would be locked in, top six role, power play minutes, right? Like, Quinn would be in all the offensive zone starts, all the opportunity to just go right in and score as many goals as possible. Didn't Benson kind of play more of, like, a different type of role? Wasn't Benson on, like, the third line a lot? He was playing not power play until late in the year. Benson was playing on the penalty kill all year. So I'm not saying that that has to be a total excuse for why he only scored 10 goals, but I don't think Benson's been used the same way they would have been using Quinn all year. They weirdly, not even weirdly, like it's just the player he is and the credit to his hockey IQ is that he's 18 years old and the thing they, the role they kind of put him in was like a defensive specialist type of role.
Which is what they did with Krebs for a while.
Yeah. One of the maybe are back at.
Right. How about, by the way, Krebs. Can I bet they trade him?
That seems like good. I mean, his value is probably the, should I say it's the lowest ever going to be? Like, is it going to be better?
Not unless you play him for a lot, and I don't know if he's going to jump over anybody. I mean, he's supposed to jump up when Middlesat got traded, and that didn't really happen. I was kind of shocked to find last night Sabres Fun Stats on Twitter, at Sabres Fun Stats posting. Last night was Krebs' 200th game as a Saber.
No way.
Yes.
Come on. 200?
200. 200 games.
How long? Did he play them right when they traded Eichel? Did he show right up on the team and play? Or I guess that's, I mean, how long ago was the Eichel trade now? Is that 3 seasons almost? Is that 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, he had the year he came back, the cup year, and then this year. That's basically 3 full seasons.
The first season with the Sabres, he played 48 games because that was like a trade halfway through the year.
Yep.
Okay.
48, 74, 78. 200 games with the Sabres.
I guess it makes sense. It's just the number just kind of, it's like, what? 200? That's a lot.
And he's
an RFA, by the way, coming up.
He's an RFA.
Is there any fear of, hey, he's still only 23 years old? You could have what happened to Middlestat with him.
You could, or Thompson. You have to have that fear with everybody now because of what Tage has done, blossoming so late. But
isn't Tage different though because he was 6'7"?
Maybe, and they changed his position. Maybe that was it.
But Krebs was a first round pick.
First round pick and one of the prizes of the Eichel trade.
Yeah, he was Vegas' best prospect.
Yeah, there have been times where, you know, you might have been optimistic about him. Maybe you still are. He is said to be a really good passer, like one of the best passers, and, you know, they put him in a role where he had to learn defensively, as they've done a lot with this team. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's the guy that gets traded so Kulik can come up and take those minutes. But 200 games for Krebs, and again, like, I'm not trying to take shots, but how many times have you remembered him on the ice? How many games has he had where you're like, wow, what a player?
Well, back to the toughness commentary at the beginning of the segment. The only thing, what are the moments you remember?
I remember him going psycho. Occasionally, he goes,
yep,
screw loose on the ice, and he'll fight and he'll get wild.
Yep, like isn't the moment people remember of Krebs right now in Boston where he's bleeding, leaving the ice, and he's shaking his fist to the bench like, "Come on, boys, let's go."
Yep,
like that's what you think of Krebs for right now. Is what's the goal that you think of for Krebs?
Yeah, what's the ceiling?
I think he scored in the night Eichel returned, but like no one remembers. That's not like a famous goal.
Only because Tuck did too,
right?
And he stole the show there.
Yeah,
803-0550. The Masters gets back to round one today. The weather delay pushed things. We'll talk with Brian Koziel. First round leader Bryson DeChambeau Let's go. I like Bryson, by the way. I hope you're ready for that announcement.
Even what?
I like Bryson.
You like Bryson?
I like Bryson.
What? Even with his dumb LIV hat?
Yup. Boy, the LIV hats. Woo! Why did John Rahm shoot a 73? Because of what he had to wear. And then there's Sergio. There's never been a better time to talk about golf fashion because half the golfers out there are actively fighting it, speaking of toughness.
DeChambeau, I will say, of the LIV hats, has the one that I like the best because it's just like, well, it's more generic than the other ones.
For me, it's more about his social media videos. I think he's actually, I'm taking lessons from Bryson DeChambeau a little bit. All right, it's Jeremy and Joe. Good morning. Happy Friday. We've got a draft coming up today. Yes. Lots of wide receiver stuff, rumors, good stuff as we roll. Brian Koziel next on the Masters and your thoughts on, you know, the Sabres if you want, fan appreciation night, and as we count down to less than 2 weeks from the draft.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WGR.
And at the end of the play, Rasmus Dahlin, look out, Capitals are coming.
Yeah, somebody's got to get a hold of Wilson. He's the most dangerous one out there.
Oshie is throwing punches at someone being held by the linesman.
Yeah, he's coming in the backside on Dahlin.
And Tage Thompson against the boards has a pretty good hold of somebody, and they might let him go. Thompson and Pacioretty.
Thompson
and Pacioretty are gone. Right hands by Tage Thompson on Pacioretty. Thompson's letting him go. Upper hook. Wilson up top now on Greenway as they start slugging at one another. Thompson keeps throwing bombs. Greenway and Wilson as well. Pacioretty and Tage still on their feet going at it.
Beautiful way to end this one.
One of the moments of the game brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For the moments in life, go forth to Firth. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Brian Koziel joining us. He was at the game last night. Sabres fan appreciation night. We'll start there and then dip into the Sabres. Brian, good morning.
Gentlemen, good morning.
Where do we begin? The fight? We spent a little bit of time on that.
Crowd was loud in that play.
Yeah. It was, whatever. Like, at the end of a game, a good way to appreciate your fans, give them a show right at the end.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I don't know if Dahlin intentionally meant to interfere with Oshie the way he did to kind of get things started, but the Capitals clearly were annoyed with how they ended up playing in that game. I mean, they ended up getting no points in the night where, you know, as you mentioned, Pittsburgh picked up a win. Detroit got a point. Philadelphia got points. So it was a really bad night for the Capitals all around. And, you know, for the Sabres, maybe it starts off with, well, here, you know, Washington wants to kind of shove us around here at the end. And I think maybe there was some season frustration also letting loose there with some of the guys that were throwing punches. I mean, Thompson, I thought initially wasn't going to do anything. And then all of a sudden he's going blow to blow there, trying to really let him go and put on a show for the fans. I mean, there wasn't a ton of what you'd say a heavy arsenal fighters out there for the Sabres. But it, yeah, it was a fun way to end it. I thought Rob summed it up really nice.
Yeah. They win. They win in fan appreciation night. I know, Brian, was there anything about last night's game? You get goals from Benson and Quinn. I feel like that's a good thing to point to. Like, all right, well, maybe a sophomore jump from Benson, maybe a healthy Quinn, and some other tweaks. Like, I've been back and forth between the frustration of the drought extending, but also wanting to point out that they're not close to their own rock bottom. They've come a long way from their own rock bottom. So, you know, the idea of making a jump next year, it feels like it's reasonable, just the same way that it was this past season when we expected them to make a jump.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's tough when you look at this year in terms of, like, just where they're going to end up in the standings. I mean, ultimately, You could sit here and we could spin it and say they only were better than three teams in the entire East, Ottawa, Montreal, and Columbus, and then that doesn't feel very good at all. Or you could sit here and do what I've probably done on every single post game, like, oh, if they had just won the two games against Detroit, or if they just not got swept by Anaheim, or if they just had a power play like Rasmus Dahlin had, like, it's so close on the other side. you know, they're not that far to the other way either. So I feel like I'm a little caught in the middle in terms of just where I feel like they fit. Benson, Quinn, those are things I think to be excited about. If Quinn doesn't get hurt in either situation, maybe they're in, because I thought he had a very good impact when he was healthy on this team this year. Benson, obviously, going forward, I think is a definite piece to the puzzle that you know you can count on. It's funny, last night, Benson was asked by Paul about his goal, and he says, "Oh, I love being around the net." He goes, I feel like I can get a lot of goals that way." And I'm like, "Jesus, like, you know, a Saber team that has somebody that actually likes to be there," and he ends up being one of, you know, the smallest, youngest guys to be there, and he's already kind of got the mentality that you're looking for, that the Sabres we know maybe lack in such a strong presence area when we see some of these other teams score goals that way. The forward position will definitely be the spot of the offseason. It seems like they're set in net with Luukkonen and Levi, I would assume, would be the two goalies next year. The trade for Byram seems like at least like maybe their top 4D is set. And with how Clifton finished, I think, stronger, and Joki Haru was pretty solid, maybe the D doesn't need a lot of tinkering. But the forwards, for sure, I think, need a lot of work. If you replace the entire third and fourth line with different players, whether it's between call-ups, free agency, and trades, I think it might be a good idea.
Brian Koziel on the Western Hotline. You know, looking at last year's standings, it's Philadelphia and Washington and Detroit. Those are teams the Sabres finished ahead of last year that they will finish behind this year. So three teams leap them. You know, can they be Washington? Can they be Philly, who just has that little leap up into the play? And Detroit, too. So you can jump up a couple spots. Anyway, Sabres season has two more games coming up. Brian, on the Masters, unless you got something to throw on the Sabres one more time?
No, one more thing. You mentioned these teams, and I wonder how much of it maybe is just some of the injuries or the loser points and things like that. You look at Washington and Philadelphia, and I still think the Sabres are better than them. And I know that people are going to sit here and say, well, they're not. I mean, they didn't finish ahead of them in the standings. But I look at, like, an indicator that I like to look at quite a bit. I mean, the Capitals are a minus 42 goal differential. The Flyers are a minus 26. The Islanders, who are in the playoffs and will be because they've won six in a row, they're a minus 20. The Sabres, you look all the way down the standings, there they are at a plus one. I mean, usually it tends to work out that the positive goal differential teams are usually the ones that are in, and the negative ones are usually the ones that are out. And there you've got this freak stat that's standing out here, that the Sabres are on the plus side of things and they're in fourth last.
Brian Koziel on the Western Hotline. Tee to Green is a special 2-hour show coming up this weekend. Masters week, of course. All right, Brian, there's a lot going on, of course. I mean, DeChambeau, the leader, Scheffler right there, as expected. Let's start with Tiger. He looks good, right? Like, if you didn't know the number of things he battles to play, I know, like, walking's always going to be an issue for him in the hills and endurance, and he'll have a bigger challenge because he has to walk more than 18 today, right? So that's a part of it, but, I mean, he looks good. If you're thinking about Tiger extending that cut streak, I feel like he's going to do it.
So far, so good, for sure. And I think, you know, through 13 holes, he's putting himself right now in a tie for 17th. You know, at the end of the day, he's got the same score as McIlroy. He's got the same score as Cantlay. He's got the same score as Finau. And, you know, he's one birdie away from being in the top 10. So I would call that a very, very successful first day overall. To me, what really showed a really good round for him is what he did on 10, 11, and 12. He gets to the back nine. That's a very, very tough stretch. And he missed the green on all three of them, and he got up and down on all three of them. And I would say, with, you know, relative ease in terms of how he did it, the putt on 12 on that par three was really, really impressive. And that was maybe the most emotion you saw out of him all day. He knew that was a really, really big putt. And now maybe today he goes to play a stretch of the course where maybe he can get another birdie or two. I mean, 14, 15, 16, those are spots where usually guys are thinking, hey, I can play those holes under par. So if he somehow even can even just get one more, be one under the rest of the way in and lock in a minus two score, I mean, not only is that cut streak involved here, but, you know, I know it's only, it would be a quarter of the way through, but we could sit here and talk about, well, is it realistic that maybe he puts himself in a competition spot over the weekend? I think possibly it's realistic. The toughest task to me, it doesn't look like there's anything wrong with his golf swing at all, is will 23 holes of walking today, including starting very early. He's going to play in about an hour from now. Will his body hold up? And if so, then I think it'll be fun to see what he does going into the weekend.
I had this thought watching him yesterday. Is it right to think that if he did not have that accident, like if the walking wasn't as big of an issue that it was, that he would be pushing for majors consistently, even at this age?
I think so. I mean, I can't remember if I mentioned this with you guys or not, but I was watching or listening to some reporters talk about how, look at if he was offered a riding cart, that they think he would be top five in terms of like the betting favorites if he didn't have to walk. Like that injury really just is so hampering him in terms of how he has to walk and the pressure that it puts on his lower body. If it was just solely about the golf swing, they still think it's a top five sort of swing. And I guess, I don't know what Tiger's body's feeling, but he doesn't look comfortable walking at all. But, man, the golf swing still looks really, really, really good.
Yeah. He called the wind yesterday, Brian, diabolical. And it was the windiest, maybe the most challenging day for that, maybe, that he's ever experienced at Augusta. The whole field being impacted by that, and maybe Tiger having holes left. I'm actually asking this not knowing what the weather's like today there. Could it be a benefit to Tiger and others that have holes left that they were able to kind of push those off to today?
It could be, I guess. You're right. I mean, the fact that you would think maybe this morning, it could be a little clearer. I know it's supposed to get breezier in the afternoon, so maybe the fact that it's calmer when he wakes up and plays these holes this morning, it could be an advantage. I mean, I know for him, with how early he has to start his routine and everything, I guess, though, he is used to this, that, waking up at 3 in the morning or 4 in the morning, whatever he ends up doing here for his normal routine to get his body prepped and ready to go play. But, yeah, in terms of just the physical wind, it is supposed to be windy again this afternoon,
okay.
Finishing. But this morning, I mean, he wouldn't have played 14 through 18 in maybe calm conditions this morning like maybe he will here. So I guess at least for the finish of round one here for him, maybe he will get a little advantage.
Speaking of, I was going to go to Scotty Scheffler.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, you should trademark the phrase the Scotty Slam. I feel like at some point in his career we're going to have to talk about it, that he might do the Tiger Slam. Scheffler in last year, his top finishes at majors, he's finished 8th at the Open Championship, 2nd at a U.S. Open in 2022, 2nd in the PGA in 2023, and he's the defending Masters champion. And the way that he plays, especially if he can putt a little bit, which he's been doing well this year, it's not close, Ryan. We are maybe on the edge of, let's say he has a good putting season, we're right at the doorstep of one of the all-time great years of golf that would match one of, or at least be in the conversation with like some of Tiger's best years. He's a machine.
He is. I mean, Tiger's best year was the year that he won like 10 times in like 13 events. So, I mean, Scheffler's already got 2 wins, and he almost, he was a putt away from getting himself into a playoff on a third chance for a win. This tournament so far, he just looks tremendous. Yeah, the Scotty Slam seems like a realistic possibility with how he's playing. And I think still, I know DeChambeau gets out in front here. I still think it is a bad, bad sign for anybody else in the field right now with how he just kind of got himself around that golf course yesterday and played tremendously well to be off the lead and only having to run down one more guy the rest of the way.
Yeah.
His putting confidence is really, really good. So, I think we could start by sitting here very realistically here, not even through the entire first round with everybody, and sit here saying, is there any reason why Scheffler shouldn't be the favorite going into the weekend? I don't even know right now if you said, look, you can have Scheffler or you can have the rest of the field here right now, even with not even one round one totally finished up. If you gave me the choice, I think I'm taking Scotty.
Yeah. Wow. He's plus 140 to win. Next is DeChambeau, plus 550, and next is McIlroy, plus 1,600, to give you an idea of like
the next, even though he was, what was McIlroy, 1 under yesterday?
Yeah, he's 1 under. Yeah.
Homa was the one I was expecting you to say next because he's got holes left.
He's right there with McIlroy.
Okay.
But that's just such a gap between 1 and 2 and 2 and 3. If Scheffler wins the Masters back-to-back, he'd be the 4th to do it. Brian, you know the previous 3?
Well, Woods for sure.
Yeah.
Faldo?
Yep.
Faldo. I wouldn't have got that.
This one is go ahead. Don't think too hard.
Is it Nicholas?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So Scotty Scheffler would join that group back to back. What do they do? I got to ask this question. Who puts the jacket on the back-to-back winner?
Oh. Would it be the previous guy again?
I don't think so. When you go home? Well, I know it's the champions dinner and all that. The chairman of Augusta National puts the jacket on the guy if he wins back-to-back.
That's lame. Come on. It should be, how about guy of your choosing?
Thank you, Brian. Where are you guys? Where are you guys this week again for Tee to Green?
2 hours, 7 to 9. We're at Pendleton Creek Golf Club in North Tonawanda on Saturday. So that's tomorrow morning. Yes, looking forward to it.
Very good. Brian Koziel. Thanks Brian. Oh, okay. Sorry. Rahm won last year. Okay, why did I think? Scheffler won it 2 years ago. Thank you, my buddy Paul Texan. I don't know what year it is. It's 2024. Scheffler won it in 2022. Rahm won it in 2023.
I mean, you said Scheffler and I didn't even blink. It felt right.
He just wins all the time.
He won 2 years ago and then Rahm won last year?
Yes, okay. He won 2 years ago. Rahm won last year.
Gotcha.
Rahm shot over par. And
right, because we had the Spanish-themed Champions Dinner this year.
That's right. Sorry, everybody. So Scheffler would not join that club until maybe next year if he wins back-to-back.
I would not have known that answer. Of like who puts it on it. Wouldn't just have Tiger do it.
Well, it won't be an issue this year.
Do you watch the ceremonial tee off yesterday, by the way? Gary Player out here at 88 years old, just slinging it down the middle of the fairway of 200 yards is just incredible.
Yep.
It's awesome.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Jeremy and Joe, you can give us a call if you'd like. Plenty of draft stuff to get to. Got some good juicy rumors from yesterday. Benjamin Solak on the Bills and what they may do. Jordan Reed. Plenty of good stuff. You can join us if you'd like on this Friday. And we'll do a mock draft, 8 o'clock. PFF.com. We'll fire it up again. We tried to trade up last time. We couldn't or didn't. We also drafted a center once.
I have not liked our mantra.
You know what we'll
so
do this
far?
Time? We'll, at PFF.com, they have a slider about randomness. We'll dial randomness all the way up.
Oh, man.
Let's get stupid. It'll be a let's get stupid mock draft.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. 803-0550 on WGR.
Driving,
Tiger Woods. Hey, speaking of Tiger Woods, his we'll visit the green carpet a little later today. Talk fashion of the Masters.
Oh, yeah.
He looked really good. The logo is the logo. It might not be the best in the world, but
good combo.
Yeah, the launch of the stuff wasn't that impressive. What he wore yesterday, Tiger was looking good. You know who didn't look good? Jason Day.
Who I think was in his group, right?
Parachute pants.
What was the, like, was that like a pouch on his right pant leg?
It was wild.
He also picked those on the windiest day possible so that there was one point.
He could have sailed home to Australia with those things.
I was watching him line up a putt, and there was a gust of wind, and like the sides of his pants, it's like I don't even know how to describe it. Like you said, like I thought he was gonna blow away in the wind.
Do you guys remember the Goofy movie, the Disney A Goofy movie? There's a scene where he's like falling, and his pants open up.
You could have done that.
Like parachutes to the ground.
Headline from Golf Digest: Masters 2024. Jason Day's pants are the talk of the golf world. It was nuts, and I flipped it on and listened to the announcer. It's like, boy, Day really hasn't looked comfortable all day out there. And I thought, it's the pants!
Those pants look comfortable, actually, right? Like, he probably was comfortable.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to carry around all that fabric around a golf course.
Yeah. There was a good picture. Tiger, back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they always used to wear pants like that.
Yes. Parachute pants on Tiger. Yeah.
But this is how I am with fashion nowadays. I always have to consider the possibility. Is this just a trend that I haven't seen yet? Are the big poofy parachute pants back?
Yes, the big poofy parachute pants are perfect matches with hats where the logos are upside down. Which you are on
very,
that train
very
now.
Very different things. That definitely is a trend.
I don't dispute that.
That definitely. I saw Post Malone in his new music video wearing a backwards hat. I'm like, perfect. But there's that guy. If that guy's doing it, then I was ahead of that guy.
Upside down
hat.
He
probably recorded it before. Upside down hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Dallas, but spelled upside down.
Post Malone's allowed to do it. Post Malone's cool. You're cool, too. It's fine. The Masters. Good stuff. Watching yesterday, I tweeted about this. So it's afternoon. The golf is on late because the 2.5 hour delay goes and they suspend the first round and go to round one again today. My son pulls up his high chair right in front of the TV and sits down. He's ready to watch golf. I've told before, he loves to watch golf. He yells at guys to make a putt. He did that when he was less than two, he'd yell, make a putt, make a putt. Anyway, he pulls the chair up. He sits right in front of the TV to watch the Masters. He's watching for 30 seconds, Joe, before he says, Daddy, I want to go to that golf course. I'm like, yeah, buddy, we all want to go to that golf course. So yeah. it's a life goal. Meanwhile, he's got a better chance than me. He might have decades to do it where I'm running out of time.
He should get in the lottery now. Yeah, get in the lottery now. Have you seen, by the way, did you know Jason Day? Like, we know his outfits for all 4 days.
I have not seen them.
There's a sketch of all four that were by, I guess, Melbon, the company that, that dresses him.
Which they have some interesting hats and cool shirts, but the pants.
Yeah. So the tweet, it was from Patrick McDonald from CBS, and it was, everyone, there's no way he can top the parachute pants. And the tweet is, Jason Day, watch me. This is radio, so only Jeremy's going to
see this. I will see this. We'll retweet this. What?
Look at what he is about to unveil
today.
Today. Look what he's about to wear.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
That's the right response.
Jason Day today is going to wear what looks like is, first off, the sketch of Thursday didn't do justice to how baggy the pants are.
No, that's definitely right.
Like the pouch on the pocket is like a scorecard pouch. It's about scorecard sized.
Okay, yeah.
Today, he's going to wear pants, but the shirt slash vest slash, if I may, NBA jersey.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
It looks like an Italian league NBA jersey or something. It looks like he's wearing an NBA jersey.
It's going to look like he's a basketball player.
Jason Day
with really parachutey pants.
He is going to break the golf internet today with his getup.
I can't. When does he tee off? I got to find out.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
we got to get a break in. 803-0550. A lot of folks talking Brian Thomas Jr. yesterday. I heard Chris Sims will play that. Have Matt Harmon on him as well. Could that be the target for the Bills? Lots and lots of chatter about the Bills making a move. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.